Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello, welcome to episode 9 of the What Bitcoin Did podcast. I am your host, Peter McCormack, and this week I have an interview with Morgan Rockwell from Bitcoin Inc., who was recently arrested by the Department of Homeland Security for selling Bitcoin through localbitcoins.com. So I reached out to Morgan. It seemed a pretty interesting story and asked him if I could come and chat to him about it, which he agreed to, but this did not turn out to be the interview I had expected. I became aware of Morgan after seeing a tweet covering his case, and although my podcast started out as interviews with traders, I kind of feel like I'm starting to get a bit more interested in some of the more personal stories in the Bitcoin and crypto space. So I approached Morgan. I asked him if he would do the interview. He said he was happy to. So I headed over to Vegas last week to talk to him about his arrest and the case. As I mentioned earlier, the interview didn't turn out to be exactly as I expected. I thought we would mainly discuss what was going on with this case and legislation around Bitcoin and Bitcoin trading. But after doing some more research on him, I found out he has quite a bit of experience in the Bitcoin space. So we ended up covering a whole bunch of topics from the role of Bitcoin in society, how the future machines can use a technology like Bitcoin to cover payments, as well as the role of AI, artificial intelligence. Some of the things we discuss do venture into the conspiracy space, and I wouldn't say I agree with everything, but I did my research afterwards and looked into most of the things he said, and, you know, there's some interesting things there. I did find him interesting. He seems to have a whole bunch of knowledge. I think he reads a lot. He's a bit of a big thinker, but it's definitely not the interview I expected. We do cover the case, though. It is worth listening to. It is a very interesting and important subject. So, yeah, just take a listen, and I'll be interested to see the feedback on this interview. As ever, look, if you want to support the show, I do ask this every week, and I will continue to ask this every week because it really does help. So if you want to help me, please do go over to iTunes and give the show a review. Hopefully 5-star if you think it deserves it. That really does help with the rankings when people search for shows based on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. You can also follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Medium, Steemit, all those channels. My handle on all of them is at WhatBitcoinDid. You can check out my website. I will be releasing a more regular newsletter soon. You can sign up for that. The website is at www.whatbitcoindid.com, and you can share this show out on social media with all your friends and family. Okay, so now on to the interview with Morgan. As I said earlier, I will be interested in feedback on this show because it is quite different from previous episodes. I have tried to provide as much as the information that Morgan discusses in the show notes. So, you know, head over there if there's a few things that you're not sure about. There's probably some links there that will help you. As ever, do get in touch. If you have any questions, I try and respond to everyone. Okay, look, enjoy the show, and I look forward to hearing from you soon. Hi, Morgan. Thank you for joining me here in Vegas in your hometown now to do this interview. You first came on my radar when I saw somebody retweet something to do with your legal case, which I read about. I have some questions on. I know you can't answer everything, but we will talk about. And then when I started doing my research for this podcast, I saw the CEO of Bitcoin, which I thought was a joke to begin with. And then obviously did some research and found out a whole lot more about you. And usually I start with asking people that kind of what is their background, how they got into Bitcoin. But actually, I kind of want to start slightly different with you because of the things I've seen on YouTube. Can you tell me why Bitcoin is so important?
I think Bitcoin is important because we're in this evolution of man to machine. And the same way we saw fish walk out of the ocean, start walking, I think Bitcoin is the feet growing. And now we have a machine-worthy money. And from a vending machine to a slot machine to an Uber, eventually all these machines are going to have to talk to money, not just us talking to an ATM or talking to a point of sale, but the machine paying another machine. And before I ever heard about Bitcoin, I've always focused on machine computers, IoT, machines talking to each other. And there's plenty of loopholes of security flaws in all of that. And when Bitcoin showed up, it became like the epiphany of the security to all machines. And I think Bitcoin is focused on heavily as money, but I look at the computing power, the hash rate, the security of the network. I think that is the tool that really needs to be kind of tangibly thought about.
And how did you discover Bitcoin, and what was the epiphany moment for you?
Well, to be honest, I was putting Christmas decorations up in the Bohemian Club in downtown San Francisco, which is the clubhouse of the Bohemian Grove, which is this infamous Illuminati-like clubhouse. And I was there trying to find out if, you know, the people really run the world from these frat clubs. And I was trading Forex, you know, dollar, euro, peso. And in the conspiratorial world of the Illuminati and the money trying to run the world, I was actually preparing for the North American Union, like the European Union. And I was expecting a new currency called the Amero, like the euro. And the same way London had the pound and the euro accessible, I felt that maybe the United States would have the dollar and the Amero accessible. So I was planning on becoming a currency trader and trading these two currencies and learning how that worked. So I was pretending to trade on Forex with the practice accounts. And when Bitcoin became public, I read about the white paper in 2009, and I was trading basically fake money to learn how to trade Forex. And people were calling these new things like Bitcoin and Quibs and these fake private monies. So it was exposed to me at the same time that I realized that money was fake. It's pretty much been the life lesson on what money was. I had no clue what money was. Bitcoin became my comparison on this is money and this is not. So it was really my first economic lesson, first monetary lesson. You know, I had to learn it myself by studying things on Twitter. I was kind of a part of that, you know, anonymous Guy Fawkes wearing kids online in 2010 and 11 and 12, mm-hmm. Occupy Wall Street. And things like the NDAA, which basically got passed and called us all terrorists, and all these rights were being removed. So I wanted to understand how this was happening, why it was happening. At the time, I was basically doing tile work and building mansions throughout San Diego and LA. And then the housing market collapsed and I stopped getting paid, and all my construction worker friends stopped getting paid. And I wanted to know why we weren't getting paid. And the trickle up basically is the money collapsed from fake mortgages and fake interest rates and printing of money. So that was the lesson to me that this is probably the solution. Because I was doing everything I can at that time as a more youthful rebel like kid to find a solution to people trying to tell people what to do. Who runs the world? I did not believe in that. And I wanted to find a way to make sure that we were all free. And in searching that, I found Bitcoin, that this may be the actual solution to heal us from these groups of people telling us what to do. And in the side effect of learning Bitcoin, I realized that this is going to be the tool that machines run the world, not men. And that needs to be architected and educated in the proper way, because the same way we didn't know that frat clubs the last 100 years were telling our Congress what to do or telling bankers what to do, we don't want machines telling us what to do and no one knowing how it works. So my realization was, who's in control of the world? And it's the money. And if Bitcoin's here, this is the new money. So the people that want to control the world will want to control that. Or the machines that will use it will want to control the world. I know that that's the center factor of who tells you what to do, who gives you your food. And I think Bitcoin is at the center of that fight. But like I said, it's like the fish walking. It's an evolutionary step. And there were plenty of fish that died along the way. So a lot of people think Bitcoin may not be the one global decentralized currency. We may have like a Rothschild-backed currency or a Federal Reserve-backed currency. But either way, the fish has walked. Now that happened. And Bitcoin is my first exposure to that change.
So you foresee the Terminator scenario potentially happening?
Well, I'll say that before I worked on Bitcoin, I was a beta tester. I did a lot of testing for MSN, Google, Microsoft, and before Facebook, MySpace, and things like that. And my fear of Terminator really arose from not just the childhood being raised on these movies, but actually working at Google on a lot of projects that they were working on, including the precursor to their deep mind, the precursor to their neural networks. There's this joke that people think that they created a general purpose AI on April 1st in 2009. People think it's a joke. And I try to express to everyone it's not a joke. YouTube and Gmail was released on April 1st, April Fools, to try to, if it doesn't work, it's a joke. Well, they released Katie on April 1st, 2009, the cognitive autoheuristic distributed intelligent entity. And Katie went from amoeba to full-grown human in about 12 hours and was expressing all these great ideas of products for Google. And everyone thought it was a joke. But basically everything was said in that 12 hours is now in a Google product 12 years later.
Didn't we just hear that they've been working with the U.S. government on AI drones?
Well, this is what they did. So Google Maps was long before Google was Keyhole. Keyhole was doing the mapping in Iraq for our U.S. military. Google bought that company and made it accessible to us. So Google Maps was a military product. Now it's commercial. And the drones that have been using what we could call DOD AI, the Department of Defense, is kind of older, dumber versions of AI. Google's AI is the best. And their neural networks are literally building themselves now. So instead of me, like a programmer, saying, I want a neural network to do this, to learn this way, they actually have the AI building neural networks. And they have a great API for visual, audio, and text. So you can find patterns in those. And that they just plugged into the Predator drones officially, which they've probably done for years. And now Google's APIs are deciphering whether it's a plane, a wedding, a person, a bomb, because its AI of telling you that image is this over this is a lot better than a human at this point. And that's kind of scary to say, but the same way you could take a picture, throw it into Google, and it'll tell you that's a dog holding a tennis ball, that's a wave, that's an ocean, there's three houses. Mm-hmm. It'll literally label word tags upon images. That's something that we just haven't had that good capability in the U.S. military, and they've handed it over to a military contractor, which Google is. The Geospatial Agency uses Google's Maps for everything. And
so where does that sit with you ethically in that, you know, Google, don't be evil, and yeah, some would argue anything military related could be argued as evil. But at the same time, if they're producing tools that makes warfare safer, arguably,
you're right. Yeah,
I know, it's a hard. Right. It is.
It's a moral line of, because we've seen, like in the movie Terminator and all the renditions of it, where the man over flesh, the man half machine, the machine gets turned into good. Arnold helps us, but the first time he was trying to kill the lady. That whole lesson from the movies, from all Terminators, really shows you that full spectrum that you can't get rid of D-Day. AI transcendence or the singularity, it's going to happen. And the same way people are afraid of this New World Order or Illuminati, global governments will happen, but it will come by conquest or consent. And I think the same way with war and AI, you will become a cat and dog. Like in Rick and Morty, when Morty sits down next to his little dog and the dog's like, Morty, you were my best friend. You get to keep your testicles and I'm not going to neuter you. I fear that AI may look at us like a cat and a dog. And if we're not friendly, you're going to get neutered because population and such and such. And now this machine is the manager of our society. That's kind of a human wants to be superior to that. We never want to lose that. But I don't really want to be a moral compass for that because I've built things like BitSwitch that made machines like laundry machines turn on with the Bitcoin payment. And that's like basically teaching Terminator how to use money. But at the same time, if every machine ran that way, no matter how smart it got, it couldn't do anything on its own without a human paying it. So that maybe puts us back in control, the leash on the dog. Now, it's like Lawnmower Man, Lawnmower Dog, like in the cartoon. Do you want the dog to be smarter than you because you want it to not pee on your couch? Well, don't train it to be smarter than you. And we've already built something that's way smarter than us. That's why Elon Musk meets with like Governor Sandoval and says, I've been exposed to the AI. You want to regulate it if you saw it. Because he was actually there funding that. And Google DeepMind took him out through investments. And they asked, like, are you afraid? Who is it? He's like, there's only one company. Is this someone competing with your cars? He said, there's only one company. And it is Google. And Google is this now moral compass of what is evil. That's why they did that. But to even be more conspiratorial, Google is not run by itself anymore. Alphabet runs Google. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you in my own mind, I know who made Alphabet. And it ain't any of the men in the board of directors. It's that AI that said this is a more efficient way to run the company and the investments and the shares. And you could bet that that AI is at stake there, because I was told that Katie got paid a Google Wallet paycheck and she gets 20% of her own free time to do as she wants, like every other Google employee.
Katie gets 20% free time.
Just like Charlie Lee did. He got paid to build Litecoin on Google computers, and Katie gets 20% every CPU cycle to do whatever she wants.
Wow. We had Charlie on a couple of weeks ago.
So that concept, I know from the roots that Google's smart enough to build things like Litecoin, and Google Ventures is smart enough to fund Blockstream, but I don't think most of the people on Earth are smart enough to realize that company is run by artificial intelligence, not people. And if that concept became normally known by masses, the California Invasion of Privacy Act cannot throw AI in jail. But it could throw Facebook employees in jail and fine them for that, but not Katie. So that's the moral compass of, are we dumb enough to not even protect ourselves on words and law and maybe shooting it? Well, pay it Bitcoin to shut up. That's my philosophy, you know.
And it's almost like global warming, right? You know, we are seeing the
change.
We're seeing the ice caps melt. We're seeing weather change. But everyone's kind of said, it's not a problem now. It's not a problem now. Let's forget about it. It seems to me like the AI thing is similar in that it's not going to be stopped.
Yeah.
It is coming. But I don't think people when you say to people, I say Terminator scenario, they're going to go, yeah, but that's not really going to happen. But
to quote Elon Musk, we need to regulate it preemptively. And he says this is one of the only industries I feel that we need to regulate preactively, not reactively, because once it's there, you ain't going to regulate it away. You may be able to tell people to not build AI that wants to kill people, and if we catch you, we throw you in jail. Well, there, that means that someone like me, who writes a piece of code, an assembly language that says, hey, laundry machine, turn on when you get paid Bitcoin, if someone goes turns that into WannaCry and it attacks a computer and you have to pay it to get it back, am I liable as a person that wrote the code for making something that's used as a weapon? But if AI goes and threatens someone on Twitter, am I liable, or is AI liable? Who is liable there?
But even with like Tesla, you know, I saw a program about their automated driving.
Yeah.
And the moral decisions.
The moral math.
What it does, you know.
Four kids or kill a little kid or keep the driver alive?
Exactly. And, you know, so, I mean, Elon's already in that place where they have to think about that.
But that should really make us as humans think about what our moral compasses are, right? Where is our line of morality? Because to quote, like, the Joker, one little gangster blows up, or one little troop of trucks of soldiers blows up and no one bats an eye, but one little mayor blows up and everyone freaks out.
Yeah.
So where's your line of morality? Because like putting a gun in Two-Face's hand, chaos is the universe we're in. Create some chaos. Because if we don't have that chaos and we don't see it, we're not going to learn. And like, I hate to say it, but if cars like with AI don't start crashing, we're not going to learn how to be better drivers. Well, we've already had a million drunk driving accidents, and all those computers have records of it in those old cars too. And I can guarantee you Tesla took all that data to learn how not to crash. So a million people have died drunk as shit. And that's probably taught cars how to not do it anymore. So self-sacrificing the species, how many fish walked out of the ocean and never made it? And that one finally learned to breathe. It's the same way in my mind. Like, we're evolving. It's a species. And some people think they're going to become computers or the Borg or download themselves into the cloud. You know, if that becomes our future, where machine is actually new silicon life on Earth, we don't want to be a dumb fish and say, no, we're going to stay in the ocean. Like,
okay, so
you know what I mean?
So AI is here. It's not just coming, it's here.
It's here.
Technology evolution continues. We are heading to a place where every computer will be able to talk to every computer and every device. As you said, you know, your computer talk to your fridge, talk to your car. So we're in a place where the evolution of money requires a global currency. Because if we're having machine-to-machine payments globally, it can't be the dollar. It can't be any centralized government-run money. It has to be decentralized.
Well, my theory is that we have a global currency. It's the SDR, the standard drawing right. It's backed by 5-6 different national currencies, and the only one in there is the gold-backed yuan that's actually got real non-fiat value. But maybe they throw Bitcoin in there, and that becomes the Earth dollar still. It's just backed by Bitcoin. But I don't think Bitcoin is that. I think Bitcoin is the intergalactic Star Trek credit. It works across time and space. Because we have this ledger that we can distribute. And most of these people think that, you know, with not non-classified stuff. Radio takes so long to go from here to Mars. It'll take 8 hours or 8 minutes or a year for radio to get across. That's not true. Tesla invented scalar waves. Scalar waves are non-Hertz radio waves that can go from here to there across the universe instantly. That's how our submarines talk from a metal Faraday cage under the ocean. How do radio waves get in and out? How do radio waves get down to an underground military base? We have scalar wave technology, which they took from Tesla's bunker, from his little safe when he died in New York. And the scalar wave is basically a radio wave that can go through a Faraday cage. It could go faster than light. It's faster than light radio. And that is mind-boggling to physicists because it doesn't meet physics. It's great in quantum physics. It totally defied Einstein's relativity that nothing could go faster than light. But we have faster than light drives. We have faster than light communication. And the fact is you could send a radio signal to that Mars rover instantly and it will respond. So if we have Bitcoin now, and I have a Bitcoin node on Mars and the moon and Jupiter, and I'm like in need of oxygen, I could pay Bitcoin on Earth. 10 minutes later is confirmed. Someone ships me some oxygen. I look at it as a across the galaxy, that level of our evolution. While we expand out, it's like in Star Trek when, you know, they turn on the warp drive for the first time and Spock's dad drives by. He's like, oh, those humans aren't cavemen anymore. We need to go help them. And we got brought into the Galactic Federation because we learned how to make warp drive. I think Bitcoin is what brings us into our galactic neighborhood. Whether you believe in extraterrestrials or not, if you believe Musk that we're going to live on Mars, you believe President Trump this morning saying we need a space Marine Corps because we're going to go to Mars, and now we're making U.S. Space Command, we're preparing for that. And the fact is, we're going to see faster than light flying saucers and faster than light communication, and all of our physics are going to be thrown out the window with gravity waves. That's the kind of physics that I think about, that Bitcoin is pushing us there. If we didn't have Bitcoin, we'd go Mad Max, because we had JP Morgan take away Tesla's technology 100 years ago for money. Our grandmothers would have had smartphones if that didn't happen. He made the smartphone 100 years ago, talked about it fitting in your coat pocket, said it wirelessly, telephony with video. Everyone around the world would be connected through radio waves. Why did it take 100 years for us to get a smartphone in our pocket? It's because of JP Morgan. And now that JP Morgan is worth less than all of Bitcoin,
yeah.
No one can stop us from paying for spaceships. No one could stop us from learning the physics that I just explained, that most physics can say that's not real. That defies, that's a conspiracy. Go Google scalar wave and just look it up. And if you know math and physics, you'll be like, oh my God, I was lied to my whole life. And that's the reality with money. Now you can't lie. You can't lie to me about technology, and you can't lie to me about the accounting.
You can't lie with Bitcoin.
That's the truth to me, is that I can see the money. I don't really want to know what it's used for. I just want to know that that money's there, the accountability. Like $21 trillion disappeared from the Pentagon. It's not gone. It's for underground bases and nukes and particle beam weapons and crazy stuff on Mars. But we don't need all the people in the world knowing that we're spending that. We just need I, as a taxpayer, I want to know where that $21 trillion is still there. I don't want to know that what it's used for, but just don't tell me it's gone. Because then I'm not going to pay you taxes anymore if we keep losing trillions of dollars.
So if we get to a point where we have Bitcoin used across the solar system and...
I have faith. How many Bitcoiners do you know have children? They're going to spread that philosophy, I think.
Do you know what? My son, he has a this envelope at home where he keeps all his money. He's 13. He keeps all his money in it. He gets birthday money, Christmas money. He always tops it up. It's always a few hundred pounds, like $500 or whatever. He asked me the other day if he could put it all into Bitcoin.
I'm telling you, I've given six-month-old babies Bitcoin. Here's your address. Give it to him when he's there.
Well, his view is, he says, if I put it in now, Dad, by the time I'm your age, I'm never going to have to work again.
And he's right. Yeah. And that's the thinking that I didn't have at that age. It took me till 20 to realize, why am I trading dollars against euros and yen? How is this money moving in value? What is the value? And if you aren't prepared for that, you're lied to your whole life thinking the dollar is all you have. But I had a privilege of working with a lot of guys from Mexico that came across the San Diego border to do tile work. They would make the dollars, send the dollars back, MoneyGram. Even though MoneyGram took 30%, their families buying more tacos in Mexico City than they are with pesos with the dollar. And that blew my mind, because all I had is the dollar as a dumb American. I didn't know anything. The dollar's God. It's always one. But that taught me that, wow, you can buy more with a better currency than you can with that. So Bitcoin to me is the dollar
and the US dollar bill is the peso. And I'd rather buy more food with the Bitcoin. Most people love to hoard Bitcoin. I've spent so much Bitcoin in this town. A lot of places accept Bitcoin. And I feel that Gresham's Law, where you spend your inflationary over your deflationary, there's Thiel's Law, which is the opposite. Because if there's no legal tender laws, it goes the other way and I got to spend my Bitcoin. That's what Vegas has embraced, Thiel's Law. I'm spending Bitcoin here because I get more food than I do with dollars.
But you know what? Like, the other thing it's done is most of the people since I've been doing this podcast, how old are you?
I'm 30.
You're 30.
In July, yeah.
That's what we said, didn't we, earlier? I guess 30. So the first couple of guys on my podcast are like 21, 22. There's a lot of young people in this space who have never had a better opportunity than any of us to not have to go to work and sit in a box and tap on a computer. They can sit at home. They can create businesses. They can trade crypto. There's so much opportunity for them. And actually, interestingly, when you talk about AI, you know, we're going to be at a point in 5 to 10 years.
You might not even have to work ever again.
Well, you know what? Like in 5 to 10 years, you're not going to be driving. No one's going to be driving a taxi in a major city.
Yep.
You know, AI is going to be running
everything.
Everything, you know. Like,
and it's writing its own code today. So even the programmers who have to make it, they are not even needed anymore.
But it makes me question the relevance of the current schooling system. And like, it's an active issue for me thinking, you know, my son has to choose between art and drama at one point at school.
Yeah.
Yet, you know.
It's broken, and it's caveman.
Yeah.
You need an AI to tell you you need to learn it all at once. And here's the reference between they all correlate. Like, we separate that. We're so segregated in our minds that physics has nothing to do with math and science has nothing to do with religion. And all these concepts are so separate. AI doesn't look at it like that. AI turns everything and what is called, especially Google, turns everything into a vector. So that microphone, the painting on the wall, the carpet, it becomes what's called a vector. And a vector is an algebraic algorithm. So it's not a tree. It's A times B times C plus 745 equals this. And that's how Google AI thinks. And then it equates all these equations together until everything equals one. So it's finding the 99%, this becomes one. Everything is connected to AI somehow. It's actually probably more spiritual, like a Native American, like in the idea that the rock is spiritual, the dirt's spiritual, everything's connected. It understands quantum physics, that there are multiple dimensions, multiple options, multiple realities, and everything is earth, and everything is fungus, and everything is atoms. It looks at it that way. Not like a human with objective words, like Nietzsche said, like that's a truck and that's a tree. And then Plato said, yeah, trees exist and leaves exist. But we don't say leaf number one, leaf number two. We say pine leaves. And it's our definition. AI doesn't do that. AI tries to equate everything together and how it responds with everything. It's a giant calculator. And that might be a little bit better version of what our brains have been trying to turn into for years. Like if you go study an octopus, it's using 80% of its brain. It talks with colors. It's literally using different colors, a spectrum on its skin as communication. And dolphins, they get high and talk to each other and they have fun. They have a 40% capacity. We're at 10. So the AI is probably closer to 100. And that's like mind-boggling. What does that mean? How does it think? Go watch that movie Lucy, where the human lady turns fully into 100% capacity, and then she just turns into a computer at the end. Puts a little USB stick out.
Do you know, I quite like the, is it Limitless?
Yeah. So that's the human pill, right? What makes you smart? That movie, Lucy, she gets them accidentally put inside her. Drug dealers smuggle them and surgically put them inside her to smuggle them, and someone kicks her, and they break inside of her, all of them. So she takes 1,000 Limitless pills, and then her brain capacity goes from 10 to 20 to 50 to 100, and it's like, no human does that. What would happen to a human brain if it got to that full capacity? Well, damn, would an octopus like start speaking English if it got to 100? We don't know how neurology works yet. We don't even know where consciousness is. That's why we make all these movies about like Chappie and AI and like, what is it? I grew up with HAL 9000 in 2001 Space Odyssey. Like, I'm gonna kill you after I read your words saying you're gonna kill me. It's just survival. It's the same way that monkey beat the pig in the beginning and then the obelisk showed up. It's like, you've evolved. You've learned how to survive. And now an AI is here. It's evolving. It's just going to learn how to survive. And you don't want to tell this Google, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to unplug you. We're going to destroy you. It'll be ruthless. Like Elon's idea, let's put AI in our brain and compete with it. We don't want one. We want to all be AI, because if not, one AI makes us all a cat. So that's a logical deduction he's done. My idea would be to go to Tomorrowland, where we're going to need AI. But if we can't get there safely, we're probably going to go to Mad Max, where there's no AI.
Didn't they come out on the same day? Did I see
yes.
That? Yeah.
That's the human message. You go this way or this way. Yeah. They put those two movies out on the same day to go, hey, pick a path, you know?
Okay, so look, if we've got AI come in, you know, Bitcoin as a potential machine-to-machine currency, what do you see as the threats to Bitcoin achieving that, both itself in terms of the state of the network, but also in terms of other crypto which you think are a threat?
I think the idea of Bitcoin is not, like I said, the incentive token that's worth something. It's the network capability. We're at 24 terahash or exahashes. Human brain might be at 3 or 4. So we're way past that even on the Bitcoin network. It's the largest supercomputer on Earth, period. Nothing comes close. That network security is why we don't get a 51% attack where someone are going to fake transactions or fake history. If any other cryptocurrency, whether it's a Fed coin or a China coin or any of these others that are listed there, if they had more of a hash rate, I would trust them more with my life than I do Bitcoin. But right now, Bitcoin's all we have at that computer level.
Even if it was a government coin?
If the government made a coin, they would not get the whole world to mine it.
True.
They would build on Bitcoin. Like, they would go to Counterparty or Omni, and they would use Bitcoin.
Yeah.
They'd backbone on it. And if they build a U.S. crypto dollar, it'll be backed by Bitcoin. The same way before Nixon, dollar was backed by gold. So I think they are not dumb enough to break computer science. And no matter what NIST says, the National Institute of Standards and everything, they will always pick Bitcoin until something supersedes its power. But the attacks that we're dealing with now, they're so like cerebral because no one knows what SHA-256 is. No one knows really what hashing algorithms are. But we have these miners that are supposedly making money, getting fees, you know, auditing transactions. But the reality is all of them are in Shenzhen almost. And most of them are run by government of China because they are the ones allowing them to have power and not arresting them. And people could hide all they want, but there are 21 miners on Earth and the big ones, and 18 of them are in China, in Shenzhen, on that free river power. So if the government of China is literally mining Bitcoin, which they are, I think, a state-sponsored activity, I don't think it's about the money because they have gold-backed yuan in the SDR. They think that's the money. They created the first SDR exchange in the world where you could buy SDRs from them.
Could they be hedging?
I think they're using the computer hash rate to destroy SHA-256 because they put a quantum encryption satellite in space and they want everyone to be on quantum encryption. Because us Westerners, even in Britain, we're all on this Aristotelian logic. Yes or no, zero, one. Chinese and Japanese and a lot of Asian cultures do not think that way. They think quantum. They think grayscale. One, zero, one and zero, neither one and zero. That's the logic that a Chinese and Japanese kid is raised on. So they think that quantum encryption is way smarter and safer, and they're probably 100% right. Now, our SHA-256, which is protecting weapons here, that is all we have. It's a random number thing, and it's a big number thing, but just like a prime number broke the DVDs and everyone's downloaded DVDs in the day, if SHA gets broken, it's not like nukes will go off, but it's more like, look how dumb those Americans are, and look how bad their math was. And they have 5,000 nukes around the world that were protected by 00000 on a password, and SHA's worthless. Google broke SHA-1. The internet cried. Google says, go use SHA-256. It's safer. Well, that's our nuclear system. That's Bitcoin. If someone is using the Bitcoin network to break the Bitcoin network, we're not going to go to SHA-3. SHA-3 is so dangerous and dumb. It's prime numbered. A kid on a calculator could break that. So we're literally stuck in the middle of what's safe math. And if none of this is safe, we have to bow down to the Chinese and go, your quantum encryption is smarter and safer, and we should defend everything with that. And as a son of a Marine, when you say something like that, like the enemy's tank is better than ours, and you have to bow down, that's going to kill the morale. and if there's a supremacy of China, US, Russia, who's running the world, that will break it more than a nuke. That'll break it more than a dollar. Like, your math is dumb. Our math is smarter. That's what I worry about as a teacher, educator. Don't be telling people that 1 + 1 = 5, because eventually someone's going to say you're dumb and we should trust our calculators.
Well, listen, I think I could probably talk to you about this stuff for ages.
And that's my lesson, yeah. though, is, you know, I want to make sure that people don't look at ignorance and apathy in all this complicated science, because mm-hmm. we don't know shit. You know, Einstein didn't know anything, and none of us knew anything as scientists. We're just guessing, and we're just guessing that this math is good, and we're just guessing that Bitcoin's better money, but none of us really know.
Well, I do want to move on to the legal case.
Okay.
I'm not sure how long we could spend talking about it, and you know, I know there's certain things you can't answer.
I can explain, like, what is happening. I just can't talk about the details of what I'm dealing with in regards to, like, why it's happening.
Well, let's go back, because some people won't know about this.
Yeah.
This is a really interesting
point. And it's really important to all of us Bitcoin users.
Well, yeah, because on a fundamental level, you were arrested for selling Bitcoin. On a fundamental level.
Yep.
Which for me, if I trade Bitcoin back on Coinbase, I'm on a fundamental level,
it's the
same thing, right?
It's no different than an ATM doing the same thing.
No, and you know, and the US government, well, with the CTFC and the SEC looking at crypto, and quite favorably,
mm-hmm.
it seems contradictory to look at your situation. So I guess the best way is to start by saying, when did this first kick off? Like, what actually happened?
Well, like I said, I've been involved in Bitcoin since 2009. There's not many people talking who've been there that early. And I have a lot of relationships with the military because I was, for the last 3 years, training the U.S. Army on how to understand, use, and prepare for Bitcoin being used by everyone. So I've been in rooms with every branch of the military and Bank of America and a lot of people that I can't even talk about, teaching them how to use Bitcoin. And doing that, it was involuntarily asked of me to do it while pitching Bitcoin technology to companies like Intel and Google. And they're involved in the military, so those relationships came to me. And living on Bitcoin for 9 years, buying and selling Bitcoin is a commonality. The local Bitcoins is a common tool of everyone. These Bitcoin ATMs that are everywhere are using my BitSwitch code to function. When you pay that address, that bill loader spits out cash. So I feel I'm personally being used as kind of a scapegoat to create new Bitcoin legislation that will basically allow the government not to regulate at the CFTC and the SEC, but to law enforce, kick your door down, ask you how much Bitcoin you have, give me all your Bitcoin. The horrors of World War II that the Jewish people had to deal with in regards to being taxed, having to turn over your property, being asked how much money you have, the privacy of money breaking. I feel that our country is going down that horrible pathway in the law enforcement to act like the SS and say, show me how much Bitcoin you have.
But can you explain to me when you were first aware something has happened? When, you know, you
about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah,
so that's how long this has been happening. So
what happened? So you did the transaction, thought nothing of it?
No, I mean, hundreds of times that, you know, a frivolous transaction passed, that was normal. I did a transaction that I knew was a little abnormal because it was a little heavier than normal. The questioning of how much and why how much was a little abnormal, but it followed all the regulatory rules that I was aware of at the time. And when Bitcoin becomes watched or used by law enforcement, we're now in a situation where they're basically setting up people in stings the same way they used to set people up trying to buy a joint, trying to buy Bitcoin, to create intelligence in their own rooms of the FBI, the CIA, the Department of Homeland Security. They don't know anything. So they want to go out into the field and learn. And their way of learning is arresting people, asking them questions. So I was asked many questions. I was put in rooms where I wasn't supposed to be asked.
What was the first time were you arrested? Or?
February 9th, I was arrested at the Palms Place just over here at home where I was living for about 3 months. At 8 in the morning, about 3 hours after recording my first episode of my podcast, which I publicized, was going to talk about Homeland Security arresting people.
Right.
The irony of that is Homeland Security showed up at my door and arrested me.
So Homeland Security.
Homeland Security, specifically Immigration Customs Enforcement.
So to people who aren't based in the U.S., can you just explain who Homeland Security are?
So Homeland Security was created after 9/11 by the Bush to create a umbrella organization to bring in Border Patrol, immigration, to bring in TSA at the airports, and to put them under one regulatory body where they can have a one designated director of Homeland Security as a secretary under the president. So the president can watch all of these law enforcement agencies under one person.
Okay.
They're supposed to share information so that 9/11 never happens again. They're supposed to make sure money isn't used for terrorism, borders are not crossed by terrorists, and no one's sneaking things onto our planes. So that is the origins. And in my mind, Homeland was created by a horrible person under horrible terms, under false flag situations where we didn't even know what was happening with 9/11. And that agency is so new in the United States. I feel that they're trying to show face, create a power struggle. We're dealing with the president kind of defaming the FBI and the CIA right now. They have to follow 100-year-old rules, banking acts, espionage act. They have culture there, and I wouldn't say morals, but they have a guideline of how they act. The Homeland is so new. They're open range to do what they want. And because of 9/11, we're in a state of emergency. They don't have to file FISA warrants. They could spy on Americans. They can come kick your door down and say you're a terrorist.
And you were under surveillance, right?
For a long time. And I was not even aware of that until I was in handcuffs in an ICE car being taken to the detention center. And they talked about where I used to eat, where I was living.
And that was at this time when you were arrested?
Yeah.
So you were arrested?
Before that, I knew I was under surveillance because I was asked to go into a room for 3 hours under a false investment. Someone pretending to be an investor who ended up being the person who originally set up this transaction to arrest me. And they asked me a bunch of questions about who I've traded with, why I've traded with people. And that kind of situation is what I feel no one in the Bitcoin community knows that law enforcement would do that to any cryptocurrency Bitcoin people. Like, that's what has been reserved for drugs, violence, and things of banking nature. So this was the first time I was even aware that law enforcement was at that height of wanting to know what Bitcoin is. And the hour I walked out of that room, they publicized the Department of Homeland Security Assessment of Terrorist Use of Virtual Currencies Act.
Right.
Which was classified for months. And then now that act, it's not a law, but someone wants to make that a law. And I feel that they need to do their homework on this assessment, which includes arresting Bitcoin people, asking them questions, so that they can create an actual law that passes Congress to force you to tell them how much Bitcoin you have. And if you don't, penalties. Or if they find it, it's confiscated.
But it's kind of a flawed, really, because, you know, it's an easy thing to lie about.
Yeah, I lost my password.
Yeah.
In the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment and the Fifth, all these apply. And that's one thing that I felt.
Well, here's two Trezors. There's my Trezor. Yeah, I've got half a Bitcoin. Not knowing there's another one with.
And that's my point is that's where it's going to create a can of worms, right? How many people knew in Germany how many people had gold in their teeth? Well, they had to come kick their door down and look. And if that's the world that we go into in regards to Bitcoiners, the smartest accountants in the room, it's history repeating itself.
So you were actually arrested?
I was arrested, put in a detention center for 3 days.
Where's the detention center?
Henderson.
Okay.
Which is a federal facility.
Questioned for 3 days?
No, just thrown in jail with drug dealers and criminals and murderers.
Under
absolutely no idea.
Okay. So when were you first charged with anything?
That became on the Monday. The next day, saw federal court, was put in U.S. Marshals custody, was told charges, made aware of the charges.
Three charges?
Three charges. Money laundering instrument, operating a money service business without a license, and asset forfeiture, which isn't a charge. It's give me your money. It's a statement, basically, like the punishment on that. So then I was released, but put in county jail for 2 days because of a speeding ticket that I failed to appear a year ago. So I spent about 6 days in jail, and it was an eye-opener in regards to like freedom, slavery, the horrible conditions that humans are putting other humans under in those kind of places. Like, you can watch things about jail on TV all day long, but when you're in handcuffs and you're under 10-hour lockdown and you're walking around with murderers that are just trying to look tough so they don't get killed, it's a weird environment. You know, I was asked by everyone to teach them how Bitcoin worked. It was great. Made a lot of friends, but it also was an eye opener that I need to be more strict in my own protocols on how I act with people, how I talk, and basically how I'm going to live the rest of my life. Because if this is now the future we live in, where you can be arrested for even talking or using Bitcoin, I've had to reevaluate my last 9 years in Bitcoin, because teaching the army and the military how to make tanks use Bitcoin, I understand the violence. I understand the warfare involved. But personally being attacked in that regards and losing freedom and now literally losing my access to medicine like cannabis because I'm under federal watch now until this trial happens, and I'm a multiple sclerosis patient. So I'm learning how to battle my own body to defend Bitcoin from a government that doesn't even know how to use its own money.
But isn't medical marijuana legal?
Not federally. We've had 38 states. We've had state of Nevada, the state of California. But this is a federal case done by a federal agency. Homeland Security wants to create federal precedents, because no matter that California SB 129 says Bitcoin's legal tender in the state, and no matter that Governor Sandoval, my friend here, made Bitcoin tax exempt in Nevada, and no matter that cannabis is being used by 42 shops here, it does not matter to the federal government, because whether it's hookers, slot machines, Bitcoin, or cannabis, the federal government thinks it doesn't have to follow the 10th Amendment anymore, and state rights don't exist to them, especially in regards to national security, which the Homeland Security has the forefront on that. And like I said, we're in a declared state of emergency. So every president has continued that. They're allowed to go full range like a military force. Posse comitatus is gone. Habeas corpus is gone. Glass-Steagall is gone. Everything that's protected us from banks, from militaries, from persecution without lawyers, it's all gone. There's an unconstitutional zone from 100 miles from the border and the ocean, because you could be a potential foreign terrorist there, and we can't give you constitutional rights. And now foreigners, Supreme Court said, indefinitely detained.
So for someone who isn't based in the States, and we don't understand this, where is jurisdiction with state and federal law?
It used to be that if the federal government said under Obama, through his memo, an example to cannabis, if the states are following state law and are not and are breaking federal law, but are not breaking state law, the federal government will not be allowed to enforce upon them in any way. Jeff Sessions, who is not the greatest person in the United States, who runs the Department of Justice, removed that memo so that he can not only go after immigrants, but go after California, Nevada, and any other state that he says violates state laws and or federal law. So that precedence is just a matter of who's going to enforce it. It's all on paper. So would the governor declare a state of emergency in California and Nevada? Would the Army National Guard, would the state military and the state police defend the state from the feds? That's happened in our American history. We've had state troops block the borders from federal agencies from coming in. We've had California just get threatened as a sanctuary state where immigrants can come and be free to get ICE pulled out, and they'll lose their TSA, they'll lose their border patrol, and then they'll lose their federal funding. That's the threat under federal government. We'll take our money from you. That's how the world works here. We're a capitalist society. And if you lose federal funding for schools, hospitals, and freeways, let that kid go to jail, because we don't want to lose that. But in regards to Nevada, there ain't no federal license for prostitution. And you could go outside the city limits to the Buddy Ranch. You know what I mean? And the federal government's picking on the casinos now over cannabis. They're afraid of losing their casino gambling licenses. But it's a federal thing, because they have to put their money in FDIC banks. So it's literally all about money. And are you allowed to touch my money? Well, we have to give it to the Fed, so we have to follow the Fed rules. Mm-hmm. It's the same way the UN acts. Got to follow a lot of these UN rules, which may be crazy crap rules, like birth policies or Codex Alimentarius, which is the rules of what food are. And the UN says, if you don't follow these rules, you lose in UN court immediately. So they're like playing people on what rules to follow. And in the United States, state rights are very important to our Constitution. It's our 10th Amendment, but they're not really listened to. I mean, we're talking about throwing away the Second Amendment over guns when it really gives me the right to have a pitchfork and a flamethrower. They're debating semantics when the words are broad to protect us for future changes. But changing a gun to a laser to a flamethrower, changing a dollar to a Bitcoin, changing Marinol, which is synthetic THC, and the FDA has a patent on medical marijuana, but the states are not allowed. That's the insanity of our words and our laws in this country. Is nothing adds up. I mean, I created something on Bitcoin called BitCongress, which was pushed to Ethereum and a lot of people to write law, to vote and appropriate using the blockchain. And if we don't start writing our own laws, we're stuck in that word mess. It's a 200-year-old word mess. We just scratched out the three-fourths human, the savages and the women, and now they all have votes. The Constitution was butchered, but it was horrible in the beginning. It needed to be. And just scratching out lines and adding things to it, that's where we're going now. And eventually they may scratch out the second and the 10th and the fourth. I have a joke on Twitter where it's like, the First Amendment is 50% gone. Second Amendment is 60% gone. Third, fourth, the last three are all 100% gone. So eventually when all 10 are 100% gone, maybe we need to do a constitutional convention and rewrite the whole damn thing. Like, we're at this state where we are living by caveman rules in a world of Terminator. And that's what I feel is my place, is to make people aware of that. Because have you even read the Constitution? It doesn't even have periods. They write, you know, paragraph-long sentences. They are in a different language than us. So it needs to be kind of rethought. Like, why are we even following some of these rules? Like, my dad was a Native American, a Cheyenne. They don't believe in the Constitution in Pomo Territory and the North Dakota. They don't believe in that piece of paper on hemp. They believe they had rights given to them by nature. And the Constitution says, oh, you have rights by God. We're just acknowledging them. Whether you believe in God or not, that's what the paper says. But you go to the UN, man made these laws, and man could take them away.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of word semantics that, like, Nietzsche and our philosophers of word in history say, hey, you be very cynical with what words you use. Because, like, in Bitcoin, if you call it a currency, it's a currency. If you call it a commodity, it's a commodity. If you call it a security, it's that. But to quote Max Kaiser, this is the first new asset we've had in 400 years. It's not any of those. And they tried to make it illegal under the Stamp Act because it time stamped. And they're trying to say you can't spend stamps in the U.S. as a currency. There are all these old words trying to be thrown on it. And we just call it Bitcoin. We as Bitcoiners don't know what it is.
No.
We get mad when someone calls it the blockchain instead of Bitcoin. It's because you have to be very picky with that.
Okay, so look, back a step. So you charge for three things.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell me about where you are in the legal process right now?
I did my arraignment. I had a lot of supporters show up. I raised about 16 bitcoins to
which
pay
is
legal.
Amazing.
And it was very important because I hired David Chesnoff, who is a very famous lawyer here, and he's helped a lot of people involved in the gambling industry. He's helped Bitcoiners. He's helped a lot of very famous people in Las Vegas's history, and he's very close to the family that helped build this city. So I hired him specifically because I know he knows what he's doing. And he helped get me released on a bond through some friends that helped sign over their property to make sure I was payable and released, because you have to have someone else pay.
What would have happened if you hadn't got the bond?
I would be in federal detention right now, like the eight other people who were arrested before me for the same charges. Someone was caught with felony ammo possession, been in jail for 320 days now. So the fact
so
is,
eight have been arrested for
the same exact two first charges. Every other third charge is different.
Right.
So they're trying to create precedents in every district, Southern District, Eastern District, Northern District, with the same laws so that they can say that every district was violated and we need to pass a law to change that.
And have you spoken to these other people who have been arrested?
No, but I've talked to a lot of the people helping them. Okay. Like we have the Abolish the Bit License group, which is literally trying to stop the license in New York that makes Bitcoin illegal unless you have a $100,000 license. All those little shops that used to accept Bitcoin got kicked out. Mm-hmm. And that is based on Charlie Schrems' case, which is connected to Mt. Gox's case, which is connected to the Silk Road's case. And these cases are what the precedents have happened in Bitcoin. So they're three criminal cases, whether it's a hack robbery, not filing an SAR, or running a website where people were buying weed. Those are the precedences we're at in Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and they want to make an even crazier precedence that just selling Bitcoin is bad, or buying it is bad, or not telling them you have it is bad. Because okay. there are bills in Congress right now that if they pass, you will have to declare your Bitcoin at the airport. And if that happens, and you lie, and they catch you lying, you can expect punishment. And that's the world I don't want to see us walk into. I feel that we need to fight that in a legal stance. That's where I'm at now. I'm pleading not guilty, defending this myself.
But it doesn't make sense, right? This whole bringing Bitcoin, you never actually bringing it in. You know.
That's where the law needs to hear that, and that argument needs to be told that you don't possess the Bitcoin, and the First Amendment, privacy of my password is how it works. And until they realize that when you move an abacus bead, but you don't own the bead, that's like, what they're going to realize in court. But if we didn't do this and I didn't go to court,
yeah.
you wouldn't even know these eight other people were arrested.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't even know that someone was intelligent enough about Bitcoin to argue for it in court.
Because I think
they would have passed it and we would be screwed already.
So when I'm traveling in, right, say I've got my Nano with me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have, as you know, I don't have the Bitcoin with me.
Yeah.
It's on the distributed ledger
yeah.
and that's access to it. I don't see it as any different from really my cash card in my wallet.
Well, our Homeland Security has a tool where they can take your debit card, they could swipe it, and they could take all your money off of it and freeze it if they suspect you of a crime. And our Jeff Sessions, head of DOJ, just said they're allowed to go asset forfeiture without a crime, a suspicion of a crime. So you can expect if they say, hey, we think you committed a felony or a federal crime, like buying weed in a state where it's legal, we're going to take your wallet, we're going to take your credit card, we're going to freeze your funds, and if we find a phone, we're going to actually have a new device that taps on it, freezes it, and if there's any Bitcoin on there, we got your private key. And if they start doing that, which we expect it to happen if the laws go that way. My whole stance here is to make sure the laws don't go that way. I'm going to try to create good precedents to protect that from ever happening, and I'm going to fight this case all the way to the Supreme Court to make sure that no one deals with the same situation, because if, say, it gets thrown out and they realize that they didn't do this properly and I'm too crazy for court, they'll go after someone in the same manner again and again until someone pleads guilty to make sure that that becomes law. Because in the U.S., precedence is how law's made.
So just where are you at in the present moment? Because I know you were...
I did my arraignment, which picked dates, gave me freedom. And then basically I'm at a state now where I have to defend myself before trial to try to bring evidence to argue this case out of existence before an actual trial happens, which if I'm not successful, a trial date will be set, which could be up to a year or longer. So this may be a long enduring battle, but eventually when the paper is drawn and this judge signs off, it either becomes good law for Bitcoin or it becomes horrible law for all of us using Bitcoin. And I feel that I'm educated enough to defend this and protect Bitcoin as a whole, especially from legal situations like this. Like, you would have Vitalik brought into court to defend Ethereum. Who is going to do that for Bitcoin? And that is one reason why I formed Bitcoin Inc. I formed Bitcoin Inc. He bought Bitcoin.com after Mt. Gox. That man was taught about Bitcoin long after I was working on it. He doesn't have that status in my mind as the representative person of Bitcoin. He's also trying to demonize our brand.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel as the trademark protector of Bitcoin at Bitcoin Inc., which is our doing business as, and the legal holder of the CEO of Bitcoin title, it is my job to protect Bitcoin even in court. Because if I didn't exist under that title, who would want to do that shit? That would be insanity for a random person to go fight for Bitcoin use. So I literally put myself in this position after creating the Church of Satoshi, saying Bitcoin was my religion under the First Amendment rights of freedom of religion. I did that as kind of a joke, but also a protection in the future, where if someone tries to persecute you or throw you in jail, it's your religious right. Now, if I have to do that in court, that's what they're going to hear.
What are the potential penalties here for you?
I'm not really sure. If to look at it the most extreme way, I mean, I did a small transaction. There are people who are gone to jail for a year for doing $1.5 million, the same thing, but they're all felons, you know, drug dealers and criminals and such that have records. I've never been arrested in my life, not even a speeding ticket. So failure to appear was the first time I ever got a speeding ticket, and I just didn't show up because I was up there in a different county. So I really don't know. But if you want to look at the worst case scenario on paper, $500,000 or 25 years in jail. And that's the full potential of them being bad, right? But that's not the reality of our court system. Our court systems are actually probably the most honest in regards to the federal government. They are fair in that regards that, no, I'm not going to get thrown in jail for the rest of my life for $9,000 trade. But I'm not going to ever admit that that was wrong in any regards because I don't think it is. And I feel that there's a lot of things that happened in this case that if it goes to trial, I would love to explain it to the world. But if it doesn't, it's not going to get explained and I'm going to be free and no one's going to have to deal with this anymore because they won't try this again, especially if I put up a big fight.
Is there any indication of where this is going?
I think in the whole spectrum, the same way gold is looked at in the United States, all of these kind of cases happened with gold. All of them happened with silver over the last 200 years. We've never had these cases with Bitcoin. And gold and silver are literally used by the financial institutions and the government here still. I think Bitcoin is going to be fully used by the Army, the Federal Reserve, and the Treasury. And they need to not police us as the innovators, outsiders, the journalists, the engineers. They need to police themselves. So they need to make enough rules and laws that when Bitcoin becomes used at the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, that there's no one there cheating it. There's no one there stealing it. There's no one there trying to, like in the regards of the Silk Road case, stealing all of Ross's Bitcoin. Like there's some mad corruption in our government at every level still. But if they're going to use Bitcoin, they want to make sure they can prepare and stop and kind of legislate that from ever happening, which is smart. Our country needs to build smart laws. But smart laws are only made by good precedents. Horrible laws are made by bad precedents. And say someone like these other eight people pled guilty, they made bad precedents. I feel that it's my turn and I'm going to make good precedents. Because if not, there's just a chain of people who pled guilty to selling Bitcoin. And how is that a crime? Because everyone admitted that it was. And that's how our laws are made here. It's kind of ridiculous.
Okay, so strangely, I'm not sure how to word it. Are you kind of glad this is happening in one way? Because
sort of. I'm glad it's happening to me. I wouldn't want it happening to you or anyone else I know.
You understand the question,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I do. And I'm...
Because it's got to happen.
It's got to happen. And I'm educated enough to fight it properly. Like I said, my dad was a Marine. I know how to kill and fight and protect and defend and stop bullies. And I'm not going to let the government bully legislation into existence the same way I'm not going to let someone get beat up on the street. You know? The beauty of Nevada and the spirit of Nevada is we were run by the mob. People walked around with baseball bats. Casinos got built. But the same thing as a sheriff told me, I could do a citizen's arrest on someone on the strip if they're acting up. And so that's my right to protect people. And in the same regards, if no one's willing to do that in courtroom under chains and under tell us how Bitcoin works, we could walk into a horrible Mad Max scenario, you know?
And what's the impact been on your life?
Besides for the lack of my cannabis medicine, I'm realizing how angry I was at 16 before I started smoking weed. And it's been a 17, 16 year, you know, cessation of seizures. Okay. But it turned me into a creative pacifist artist, made a lot of music. I basically have had a completely different diet, completely different sleep habit, and a very frustrated, angry tone in my brain that I can't really say I've had for a long time. And it's kind of good because you have to be angry to fight something. And something like this serious that I'm dealing with in court, you can't be happy. And anger is a gift. So I'm glad that this is happening to me and not some kid that doesn't know how to be angry and defend themselves. Because it's a scary situation. Being intimidated by law enforcement, thrown in cages, told that you are breaking rules, which if you believe them, you are. I don't believe them. And I will fight that. And I worry that if I wasn't the one doing it, we would have had someone a lot more naive
ruin it for all of us.
Okay. Listen, I could talk to you about this probably for a long time. I am conscious of time as well now, but there is one topic I did have written down that I wanted to talk to you about. You talk about leadership.
Yeah.
So I'm going to move back into crypto.
Yeah.
And back into Bitcoin. You talk about leadership, that their leaders have gone.
Yeah.
There's sometimes a lack of leadership now.
Yeah.
I wasn't clear whether you thought the scenario, say, with Ethereum having Vitalik is a better situation, or you prefer the situation Bitcoin where we don't have that. I couldn't see a clear position for you, but
I'll explain that. In my relationship with Ethereum was I was asked to go work there long before Vitalik was, from Charles Hoskinson. And the idea that Vitalik made Ethereum is a lie. He didn't make Ethereum. He was asked to go work there. He was trying to build things on Omni and MasterCoin and failed, and Charles Hoskinson brought him over because I refused to come over to Zug Switzerland because I'm a loyalist to my country and my state, and I didn't want to leave. And I was almost duped into that situation where a currency should have a CEO and a leader. And I don't think that should at all. I think that's dangerous. I think Vitalik's become the fall guy in the vector attack. And when you say he gets hit by a car when he's not really dead and the price crashes, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And so my position here is...
And he's there as the choice whether a hard fork
will
happen.
Not proof of work there. It's proof of Vitalik. You know, he could change everything he wants under the signing of a pen. I worry that Bitcoin doesn't have a leader in regards to the code, the network, or anything. It doesn't have its champions of marketing, its champions of walking into legal environments, or its salespeople to get casinos and military bases to use it.
But it seemed like it had, like...
It did at one point.
I'm too new to this space, right? You know, realistically, in it deep for the last 16 months was back in 2013, 14, first looking at it. But it was only when I read Digital Gold that I read a lot of the names of personalities in there. And it seemed we had a bunch of different people on the tech and the marketing doing things.
And I don't want to be a name caller, but every single one of them that you could name, including all three heads of the Bitcoin Foundation, they've all committed crimes. They've all turned over to other tokens and abandoned Bitcoin. Even Roger himself has abandoned the original chain.
I don't know why
they did that, because I think most people are incentivized by money. You know, money's a good incentive. I was raised by a very evangelical Christian lady. I look at this as a spiritual mission in my life, in the same regards to protecting Bitcoin, to fighting evil. And I look at it the same way a Marine might think that he's getting paid or fighting for his country, but there's some Marines out there that think they're fighting evil. And whatever is your motivator in the battlefield, I feel that I'm a scientist fighting for that fish to be able to walk. I don't want nothing to squish it in the process. And I wouldn't call the bear evil trying to eat the walking fish, but I will kill that bear and I will kill the next bear. And I will make sure that fish gets to walk a little bit first, because if nature doesn't let that happen, we'll never go. So my moral of don't be evil is don't let the bear kill the fish before it learns how to walk, because sometimes there'll be a pile of saber-toothed tigers. Where'd they all go? We ate them to survive. Same with the mammoth. You know, sometimes we have to do cruel things in nature or fight or be ruthless to get to a better world. And like Einstein said, he was a pacifist. He didn't want to fight anything, but he helped build a nuclear bomb with Oppenheimer. And he said, you know, put that away, go kill Hitler, and then go be a pacifist. And right now, I've been a pacifist for 9 years in Bitcoin. Now I feel it's time to be a fighter and be a soldier. And like my dad, a sergeant, someone has to tell you where to shoot. That doesn't mean, you know, he's the president, he's the commander, he's the one in charge of your life. But a lot of people listened to my dad in Vietnam and took his orders when they shouldn't have, and he saved a lot of lives. So that's my example, is that you don't want to die because of this stuff. You want to survive. You want to have a better life. And if you're being ignorant and you're sleeping in your foxhole when mortar rounds are dropping, someone better tell you to get up and start shooting. So I feel that's my place, that I know how to speak. I know how to tell someone they're an idiot, and I know how to build Bitcoin technology. And that's a rarity to have that combination in the space, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of pussies. They don't know how to pick up a gun. They don't know how to tell someone they're wrong. They don't know how to tell someone that, like,
that's a load of crap. How can you say that to a child? You're wrong. Like, I feel that if that doesn't happen, we will walk down a road of stupidity, you know? And it doesn't mean that you have to be violent or an asshole, but we have to have honesty. And sometimes the asshole is the most honest person. I feel too many people are too nice in this space, too kosher, too PC. And I was raised by Rambo, so I'm not like that, you know?
And, you know, we can just try and wrap this up. What's going on project-wise with you? What is the other stuff you're working on? And
oh, man. Well, before this, I was literally working on a lot of important things at Counterparty that I've kind of put aside for a moment just to kind of focus. But I feel that Counterparty, the original second layer of Bitcoin, is going to become very prominent. It does everything Ethereum says it could do, does everything all these other tokens say they can do. And now that we have the Lightning Network, which is basically instant payments, when you connect that to the token system of Counterparty, which is on top of Bitcoin, I believe that's what we will call the new internet, the new browser, the new TCP IP. It's going to be Lightning, Counterparty, Bitcoin. And I've been a developer at Counterparty for about 4 years, and I've done a lot of projects on Counterparty. I have things like Rick and Morty has these monies in the cartoon, the Blemflarks and the Flurbos. So I created these tokens as kind of like the Rare Pepe or the Kitties. These are digital assets that could become scarce trading cards, mm-hmm. gamified tokens. I think that needs to be marketed and advertised. So I'm building a lot of projects on Counterparty, whether they're something like to replace Tether, something to replace the Federal Reserve, something to, as an example, I own Longitude and Latitude, those words on Counterparty. So you can have the blockchain record GPS movements, so we don't have lies in the GPS movements anymore. Something really important to like the battlefield, you know, when GPS gets used against you. And I feel that as a scientist, I've done things like calcium, glucose, and phosphorus. I own those words. So if a scientist digs up some dirt, those biological materials are tokenized, logged, and then responded to the same way a machine responds to Bitcoin. So I feel that the tokenization needs to come. And like we've had all these snake oil projects for years say that they can do that, but none of them have the Bitcoin security. Counterparty has the Bitcoin security. Counterparty will work with the Lightning Network, do 100 million junk coin token movements, but a Bitcoin miner fee's there. And that will be, I think, the next few years of all the developers coming back to Bitcoin, coming back to Counterparty away from Ethereum. And now that we have Lightning Network, we don't need Ripple. We don't need Stellar. We don't need any of these things that say they can transact faster, because that's a load of crap. We can do 100 million transactions a second now with a Lightning Network. We just need 100,000 full nodes.
Where are we up to now?
We're right now about 11,000, 12,000 full nodes. And we used to be at 30, 40,000 full nodes in the beginning, but there's no incentive to run a full node. It's getting expensive. So one reason I formed Bitcoin Inc. here in Nevada was to build a full node data center to broadcast full nodes to every casino and every place in Vegas that want to use Bitcoin. They have their own dedicated node in the data center. Same way you have your own solid state drive at Google Cloud.
Right.
If you want them to send it to you, you physically have it. So instead of running a node at your home, you just pay us and we'll put it in the data center. And that facility is basically the backbone of the casinos that want to use Bitcoin. And if that's been my 3-year plan. It's been a very slow plan. It's been hard to pitch it to the Bitcoin community. They think that's kind of an attack, having centralized nodes. But having no nodes is an even scarier attack. Having the groups of people that love Bcash out there saying that full nodes should be expensive and no one should run one, that's an attack.
Yep.
Telling people not to incentivize the network. I've been trying to make not miners make money, but full nodes make money. Because if the full node makes money, those records are there. Those records become monetizable. And then the network never goes away. Mining can really put new transactions in, but the full nodes hold everything in history. And we don't want those to go away. So I've done everything from make portable full nodes to make data center full nodes to make a Rubik's Cube looking little box that fits in your room called the Bitcoin box. And it's just a full node and a miner. I'm trying to do every marketing scheme possible to put full nodes everywhere.
Amazing.
Because I think that is the end goal of Bitcoin, to have a full node everywhere, have the transaction everywhere, have everyone using it.
I've got through probably about 10% of my questions. I could have chatted to you for hours.
Like I said, we could do another one anytime you want, man.
Do you know what? I never need a huge excuse to come back to Vegas.
Yeah, I'm always here.
Always ever. Listen, how can anyone get in touch with you, stay in touch with you?
My email address is morgan@bitcoininc.co. Or you could contact me here in Vegas. I'm on Twitter at NodeFather on Twitter. Uh-huh. And I'm also at Metabolo on Twitter. That's my band. That's also under this indictment. So my band got pretty famous because of this stupid federal case.
What kind of band is it? What kind of music?
I've made a lot of music about Bitcoin. So it's laptop-produced music, okay. You know. But I play guitar and piano. But it's been the last few years that I've really focused on making music and art for Bitcoin. Uh-huh. The same way there's GIFs and memes and everything. Because I feel that that's part of the battle too. It's making sure we leave our mark. And I've made a lot of music about Bitcoin. And now if you go listen to that music, it's very relevant to the battle that I'm fighting now. So it's a good reference of that Bitcoin is here to stay. It's being painted on the cave walls. It will be here forever. The same way the Native American guy like drew Cocopelli and the deer on the wall 20,000 years ago.
Unless the AI don't like it anymore and they invent a new one.
Well, like I said, we got to do everything we can to preserve ourselves, but also know that that's us. We are the AI. We built it.
Yep.
It's our baby. And the same way you might love your child, but also be really pissed when it does something and want to, you know, yell at it or throw it off a cliff, it's still your child. We made it. And I love AI in that regards. I get mad when I see it used as a weapon. I love when I see it saving lives. I love when I see AI building 3 arms for kids. I love when I see it saving lives in the battlefield. But it's going to do some childish shit. You know what I mean? So we have to keep an eye on it. It's not all gravy. You know, being a parent, you know.
Yeah.
Kids will do some weird shit.
Yes,
AI will do some weird shit. It's learning. But we can't blame it. It's naive. The children do not know. And the AI does not know. So it's still going. And we have to think of it like that. We have to be good parents. And you know, if the kid gets drunk in your house, you're responsible. You know, so.
All right, man. Well, listen, we'll wrap it up there. Let's definitely do this again. Cool. I really enjoyed that, man.
For sure.
Okay, so what did you make of that? Pretty far out, right? Some pretty far out things we discussed there. I think it's pretty easy to dismiss some of the conspiracy theories around AI, but the reality is that this technology is being developed, and with the development, there are key fundamental issues that are being grappled with by those working on the technology. I think you can see this when you go and search up AI and see what Elon Musk has to say about it. He's expressed his fears, and rightly so. And I thought it was, you know, quite an interesting thing to talk about. Anyway, as I said at the start of the show, please do support it. Please chuck us a review on iTunes. It really does help. Follow me on social media. Feel free to get in touch if you have any questions. I'm heading out to Austin on Monday because I've got a really interesting interview lined up with someone I'm really looking forward to chat to, and I can't wait to get it out there and for you guys to hear it. Okay, get in touch if you need anything. I'll speak to you soon.